you mentioned, do we need more specific guidance on business combination and upcoming control? We reduce diversity, and that is on our research agenda, and Julia will work us through.
Thank you, Marco. Good afternoon. I'm very aware that we're slightly behind the agenda, so I wonder if it makes sense for me to skip the update on the project and to move to the questions for discussion for this meeting, or would you like a little bit of an update?
Maybe a short update on the agenda.
Okay, so basically, the ISB decided that the project should focus on business combinations under common control that are excluded from the scope of IFRS 3. The project should also consider group restructurings, i.e. those transactions that involve movement of a business but do not meet the definition of a description of business combination under common control. And we will also look at the description of business combination under common control and in particular what is common control. In the last few months, staff performed targeted outreach with various interested parties. Preliminary results show that, for example, in an IPO situation, it seems that predecessor method is most frequently used. In terms of user needs, the feedback we received so far is quite mixed and inconclusive. However, it seems that more users prefer the acquisition method, at least in the transactions that involve existing NCR. So this is what we've heard so far, but I would like to emphasize that this is all preliminary. We will continue outreach and we will report the results to the ISB in Q3. And this meeting is part of our targeted outreach on the project. So what we would like to discuss today is accounting in consolidated financial statements of the acquirer of business combinations under common control that affect third-party equity investors. And essentially, we would like to discuss whether acquisition method or predecessor method should be applied to those transactions. I will walk you through the approach considered by the staff and that invite your views. There are two types of transactions on stage today. Business combinations undertaken in preparation for an IPO and business combinations under common control that involve existing non-controlling shareholders in the accounting acquirer. And perhaps it would be easier if we look at these transactions using illustrations on the paper. So first I invite you to look at illustrations on page 7, which is an IPO scenario. So our basic idea here is that there is no economic difference between a situation where you have an IPO of a number of businesses compared to a situation where businesses are moved around within a group and then sold in an IPO. So therefore, we think that the accounting approach to these two types of IPO should be consistent. In other words, it would not be appropriate to fair value some assets and liabilities that are sold in an IPO, but not fair value others. And that it will also not be appropriate to fair value assets and liabilities in one IPO situation or not the other. So it's either all predecessor values in all scenarios or all fair values in all scenarios. So this is the starting point. If we look at an IPO scenario where there is no business combination under common control before the IPO, there is no basis in IFRS to revalue anything. Everything will be shown at the predecessor carrying values. And therefore, we believe that the same approach should be applied to a situation where there is a business combination under common control before the IPO. So essentially, predecessor method should be applied to such transactions. Now, if we look at transactions that involve NCI, which is on page 9 in this paper, so these transactions are different from IPO scenario. So if you look at those transactions, arguably, from the NCI perspective, there is no difference between a situation where the acquirer, in our example entity A, acquires entity B from a third party, as opposed to when A acquires B under common control. In both cases, what happens, NCI now have a share in this combined economic entity A and B. And therefore, arguably, from NCI perspective, accounting in both scenarios should be the same. So if A acquires B from a third party, IFRS 3 acquisition method is applied. So arguably, it would make sense to apply the same method if B is acquired under common control. However, if we were to apply different accounting treatments to different types of business combinations under common control, that would increase accounting complexity and that would create opportunities for structuring. And therefore, on balance, at this point in time, the staff are leaning towards using the predecessor method for all types of business combinations, but that's also noting that additional information, for example, selected fair values, would be disclosed. With that, we have three interrelated questions for you. Do you have any comments on our proposed approach? Do you believe in some of those transactions fair value should be used? And are there any other issues we should consider?
Olivia?
I was surprised when I read this paper because I thought that it was said that the unit of account for the unit of entity is a group. And the group has all the assets and all the liabilities. So if you change the parent company of a company inside the group, it should not change the accounting of the group. So it's the same rule that applies when you have a change in the percentage in the company, but you have not lost the control. So the change only affects the repartition of the equity between non-controlling interest and part of the group. But the asset and the liability remain the same. So I do not see why assets and liability should be revalued because you changed the structuring of the group. The structure inside of the group is, for me, transparent. Whether a company is owned by a company or by another, it does not change the group. The group is always the same.
I think that's what we're saying. We won't change. There's not fair values. I think the recommendation is, at the moment, our starting point is predecessor values. So predecessor values means it's slightly complex because which predecessor values do you use within a consolidation structure? But that is essentially the recommendation. So I think what you're saying is it wouldn't be a change. There's no step up.
Yes,
yeah,
that's what we propose.
Yeah.
Maria? Yeah, I think that's. Personally, I agree with that because the unit of account is at the group level. I think the issue is not at the group level. The issue is at the individual company level. If, in your example, they're a public company, so they have standalone statutory financial statements. So your issue is really around those standalone statutory financial statements. Not if it's under common control, conceptually and in principle, it's under common control, irrespective of whether you have externals, it doesn't matter. The person at the top is. That this is, I think, an issue not at the top. And personally, we prefer the predecessor method anyway, and it makes sense. But I think this, what it doesn't deal with is the individual company may still have to, for regulatory purposes, do its own acquisition accounting if it applies IFRS. If it's a public company that's just acquired, unless you can go back to related party, then it kind of brings back your issues around other things, related party transactions, and your equity accounting if there's one shareholder that has the 30%. So it's not the consolidated accounting that's the issue. It comes back to those other two items that Frank mentioned that fundamentally could be your issue, right? Anyway, that's just my thoughts.
So I do think you need to marry that in with the reporting entity concept. And the work that's going on, the conceptual work there as well, is the reporting entity here the new subgroup, if you like, because that's where the reporting does take place. So why does it matter what shareholders are involved or otherwise? Involves with legal entity accounting. So when you have assets that are moving, not businesses, moving within groups, what are we going to do with related party transactions at a legal entity level? I think that's where conceptually we need to be consistent about the approach going forward. Can't create a rule just unique for business combinations under common control and then do something different when you start thinking about legal entity transactions. You think back to the top hatting or all the work that Kevin Stevenson did a few years ago when parent entities were put on top of groups, and at legal entity basis we had to step up our investments for the whole business underneath to fair value and reverse reverse that accounting to go back to book values. That's the sort of things that you need to think about in this project as well.
Can I just make sure that I understand? So from my perspective, if we talk about the situation where you have like other types of transactions under common control, so for example, entity A acquires a group of assets which do not constitute a business, there is no scope exclusion for these types of transactions under IFRS. So at this acquiring entity level, you would just apply applicable IFRSs to this transaction. The reason we have an issue specifically with business combinations under common control, because they are excluded from the scope of our existing guidance, and therefore we have no guidance, and therefore there is diversity in practice.
Now, I would say there's a policy choice as to how you apply it, and different companies have taken different approaches. In Australia, for example, we have a requirement from our regulator to use the acquisition method, FOT, to be using predecessor values. So we don't have step-ups to fair value, but we do require no comparatives to be restated as a consequence of a business combination under common control. So it does have some parallels to acquisitions of assets as well.
I'm struggling a bit too with this issue of the period itself, because I don't know whether this is coming back down to the individual financial statements and the statutory filings again, because So what you're saying, if you're part of a large group and you're a regional, and you get a company transfers across when it does its own statutory filing itself, then you're talking about business combinations under common control for that. So in Australia, does every single company all the way down the chain have to do full consolidation of everything below it, as well as individual?
No, they rely on the exception at the moment that allows a few of the parents producing consolidation.
That's why I don't understand, because then it's not a combination, it's only the, you've got a transfer.
But sometimes you have to do that for local purposes in other countries because of tax rules that then bring into the consolidated tax group. You do have regulatory requirements as well that you, despite not preparing accounts, you have to prepare a regulated group that incorporates those, so you do have to come up with your accounting policies in the general ledger for the purposes of those other reporting.
Well, if that was the case, I think our solution at the moment would say that if that is a business combination under common control, because it's part of a group, and it's lower down in the group, and itself does have to do consolidated, we would be saying that's common control, and therefore be predecessors of values. And we would show what the accounting is. There's obviously there's a transfer of funds or something between one or the other, even as a share swap. We would show what the accounting requirements would be to deal with that as well. So in a way, it's implicit in that. It's, you have to deal with the transfer. See, part of our nervousness is when we get to common control transactions. If we say, well, the presumption is that there's a fair value or something, and you say you've got this exchange in shares or something, all of a sudden we're overriding how much somebody has agreed to actually transfer from one part of the group to another. Now, they might have actually transferred funds, so we're a bit nervous about doing anything other than predecessor values in those cases, plus the actual transfer.
There will certainly be situations where the transaction price, accounting never drives the commercial price, but the transaction price will be driven because of regulatory or tax requirements to deal with each other at fair value. There will be others that don't govern that, and therefore it's up to you. And that's why the whole related party accounting on legal entities is also just as much.
I agree that the ISP need to develop an accounting standard regarding business combination and common control. And SBJ has already developed that kind of standard. So you can learn the information from SBJ. And you will need to get the information from the treatment of the US GAAP. And under the Japanese GAAP, the important point is the standpoint of business combination under control is the standpoint from the perspective of ultimate parents. So business combination under the ultimate parents is usually evaluated by book value. So from that perspective, I'm a little uncomfortable with the discussion of your today's paper. For example, on page 7, you have an illustration of 5A and 5B, and you discuss that these two cases of the economically same, but I don't think so. Because in case of 5A, the reorganization of A and B is before IPO. In case of case B, the reorganization is after IPO. In my view, the economic conditions are different. In the accounting treatment, I think that in case of 5A, B is evaluated by book value. And in case of 5B, company B will be evaluated by fair value. But I think it's okay, no problem. And in case of illustration 6A and 6B on page 9, I think you are saying that these two cases are the same. And in my view, two cases that the economic conditions are different. In case 6A, reorganization is involved non-controlling interest. Your perspective from non-controlling interest, but my perspective from the parent, from P1. So from the perspective of P1, these two cases are different. From the perspective of P1, company B should be divided by fair value, and in case of 6A, company B should be evaluated by book value. It's quite natural, in my view.
But I think the question is, I think it is true that at the ultimate parent level, there is no difference when you move things around. But we, in this project, we are not looking at the ultimate parent. We are looking at the acquiring entity. So our analysis is at the level of entity A, not at the level of entity B1.
So when you're discussing the viewpoint is from A, consolidation, regarding a discussion of consolidation of A and B, or just you're discussing your parent alone financial statements?
We are looking at consolidated financial statements of entity A.
Yeah, but if you are discussing the consolidation company A,
yes.
But it is affected, accounting treatment affected, what is the ultimate parent? That is a very important point.
But the ultimate parent we don't discuss, because that is, I think, we have to apply it.
It's intergroup transaction,
yeah. Right. And it's clear that if you have group transactions, that the consolidated financial statements of the ultimate parent are not impacted at all by this.
Yeah.
And I think that is... It's only what we discuss then on these examples is if the company A has to prepare consolidated financial statements, should they use then kind of business combination accounting or the historical?
I wasn't sure if you comment on the 5A and 5B because paper says predecessor values for both, doesn't it? And you're saying we should do fair value for one of those?
Yeah, so in the case of
5B, we should step
out. Perspective of ultimate parents, the accounting treatment should be different. But you are discussing from perspective of company A. So, the SVJ's accounting standard is prepared from the standpoint of the ultimate parents.
But I think we have guidance for ultimate parent. We are looking at a slightly different issue.
But I think you would have to conclude that every reorganization transfer has to be fair acquisition account. If that's the case, because we think it's just basically a restructuring in a sense underneath P1, and so we would have princess values.
I think, Alan, that the ultimate parent is a restructuring.
Yes.
Absolutely. But in the subsidiary, which might have an NCR, there's a transfer of value here.
So you want acquisition accounting for restructuring?
Well, otherwise, when the subsidiary buys whatever it bought from the ultimate parent, it's issued its equity. Well, that's at fair value. Tick. So I've got a debit because the predecessor account that's going to appear in the sub won't be the fair value of the equity that the sub has given up, and that they're not non-controlling interests in the sub, they're non-controlling interests at the parent. So these shareholders have given up value. So when it does if it's going to pick up a predecessor accounting in the sub and it's issued to the parent its shares, there's a debit, which is going to get lost inside equity. But that's a real transfer of value that the shareholders have given up to the parent. And that looks like an asset.
Can I just make sure that I understand? So you are focusing now at the situation where with existing NCI, and
there's no existing NCI. The existing NCI is at the holding company. I can't work out which example it is in here because it keeps talking about NCIs.
Well,
the NCIs only exist at the ultimate parent.
Not necessarily.
No.
If we look at page 9.
Yeah.
In fact, there is a sub-consolidation. Consolidation of Group A, which is a subsidiary B.
Yep,
so the consolidation at Group A level has NCI.
And they look at
how the consolidation of Group A should be
registered. And I'm saying A is, I'm in an example where A has got no NCIs. But it's a subsidiary of an ultimate parent.
Okay, which is not in the scope of the discussion, but in any case, so you are saying in this situation where you have A, it's wholly owned by a parent, no?
No, it's 60% owned by the parent.
So it is a scenario as I'm discussing.
No, A has got no NCIs. The NCI only exists in ultimate parent. It doesn't exist here.
I think we've got some terminology confusion here. I think Kevin's point is that from the perspective of A, they're all just shareholders.
That's right.
The fact that it's 30% of the minority and 70% of the controlling.
There's no NCI at A.
They're not labelled differently. Yes, we think of them differently when we get to the top, but at the A level,
when A buys then something from its ultimate parent and transfers shares up there, there's a value shift. And that value shift, in my mind, needs to be recorded in A's financial statement. Eliminated at ultimate parent, because it's a transfer between others, but at A, that's a value shift. And that sounds like an asset.
And you are
but
saying
it's
that
accounted, but how? Because clearly, if the value is different, you account for fair value, and then maybe you have goodwill. But it does not mean that you have these individual assets and liabilities you have to fair value.
It might do.
But that's the question. What should
you
prefer?
You know, because what you have, let's say you've got, you know, a listed company in Europe, which has 60% of a listed company in Australia. The regulations in Australia would require that that holding company can't even vote. So the third party at the UK holding company has had 100% decision on this. Not because it's not under common control for the purposes of this transaction. So that sounds like a real transaction, which gets eliminated at the group but doesn't get eliminated at the sub.
One of the risks of giving a paper like this is it's slightly condensed and you're missing some big sections there. We had long discussions about NCI. The issue here is about how you measure the individual assets and liabilities, because we agree that when you've got a non-controlling interest involved, and I agree it's NCI at the top, essentially, there could be a transfer between those shareholders. So we have talked about what happens in that situation. And maybe so rather than go to full acquisition accounting, we're better off having the predecessor values. You have got the transfer, and then having specific disclosures about those transfers and about how NCI has been affected by the transaction. So that's the route we would go down.
But that sounds like the offsetting standard. If you can offset just in case you did put the gross in the finance, that disclosure is useless information because it's the financial statements, it's never going to be amortized, it's never going to be depreciated, so why get it? How can it be useful to say, we've transferred something there, but don't worry, the balance sheet shows it's written off.
Maybe we need an offline conversation, go through some examples, because we're anticipating there could be a transfer within equity between the different types of shareholders, and it's a permanent transfer, because it's a wealth transfer, but that should be disclosed. It's not a matter of a dangling debit or a printed credit somewhere that we've got to deal with later, but it's actually a transfer that gets locked in. But we need to understand if there has been a transfer. So you need to understand essentially the fair value that's been transferred and what the level of consideration was for it.
I think it is also true that conceptually, I think again, the example you are giving is exactly the same what we have on page 9. Again, like all these business combinations can happen in 5 million ways, but it still comes down to a very, very few basic scenarios. So I think it doesn't really matter whether LCI sits directly in A or whether it sits at the next level of consolidation, because at the end of the day, you end up in a situation where directly or indirectly, part of A is held by the group and controlling shareholder, and part of A is held by someone else. So the issue is the same. Is there a wealth transfer and how it's best portrayed? And that's why we said in this example, IFRS 3 has more merits than predecessor values compared to IPO scenario. But you still, like, if you wanted to do IFRS 3 here, you immediately hit the issue. If you have different accounting for different types of transactions, people can structure, and you can, you know, essentially sequence the transactions in a way to get the particular accounting outcome, which is not necessarily helpful. But other thoughts?
Okay. Well, I know this idea has been kicked around for many years, so I haven't read all of the predecessor papers. But if you're going to tackle this issue, just going back years ago when I was at the board, I was confronted with these sorts of issues. Typically, I mean, what I would have liked then was guidance on, many times I was looking at an individual who was having different companies, so the individual, actually, you say that P1 has to be an entity, well,
doesn't it?
You did that starting on the first page, so it should also be an individual.
Yes.
It could be an individual,
yep.
Right? Then the whole point about how you want Frank raised, when you actually perhaps changing from one jurisdiction to another by forming new holding companies, they could be quoted companies basically with the same or very similar shareholder basis, but you have to tackle that, and then you get into the whole issue. When you form a new holding company, is the value that's there for the consideration, is that really a fair value? So somehow you need to address that. And then when I look especially at 6A and 6B, I mean, 6A, as I see it, you've clearly got a business combination. IA is clearly acquiring from an unrelated part of P2B. Your challenge with 6B is that, do you actually know, is it really the right transfer value? And I don't know how you, again, what Frank was saying, all of this, these issues are tied up with the related party issues, and that means that your goodwill accounting always, you can't, I don't think you can always trust the purchase price that's out there.
Well, that's why we're not advocating business combination accounting in that scenario. That would be premises values.
So 6A and 6B would lead to different solutions.
But it comes back to Kevin's issue again. If there has been a transfer, it's not, the concern is a wealth transfer between the NCI and the other shareholders. And it's not the individual assets and liabilities, the fair values of those that really matter, it's actually the business, the value as a whole. And so, well, you know, I think some people think that by going into this combination accounting, you're going to get these fair values coming in, which will solve the problem, but it doesn't solve the problem, because it's the total value that's really important. And that's the thing that's actually most troubling for most people, I think, when we get to a business combination under common control, and then what goodwill action represents in there. So we're trying to get use predecessor values, and potentially, and I think that's one of the open questions, what information do you then need as an outside shareholder, or as one of the NCI, to understand what's going on there?
And if P1 in 6 was a quoted bit, and let's say the public was also an equity interest of like 30%, 20%. If you're not careful, you'll actually have fair value accounting in A that would have to be undone by the quoted P1, because it
will always have to be undone if he prepares A out, because it has to be eliminated.
Yeah.
It's interesting on this question about wealth transfer, it's actually a twofold question. On one hand, you can argue that if you apply IFRS 3, if the transaction price is not fair, you can end up with a goodwill which is not representative of value of the business. On the other hand, some people argue, well, if you apply predecessor values in this scenario, if the transaction price is not fair, there is no information about the wealth transfer because you only show carrying values, but you are not showing fair values exchanged. So it's kind of like a twofold concern.
Do you care? Do you care? Because if the price is different to what you record the assets and liabilities at, the difference is always an issue whether you're dealing with the transaction with shareholders and therefore push the difference through your equity as a distribution or a contribution, or you deal with it as a reporting entity and you just end up with goodwill negative discount. Now, I don't agree with that. There are too many inter-entity moves that happen where you have to force legal entity accounting to apply, and transaction price can be fair value, and in other cases they can be completely different to fair value. So currently, you know, you have that tension, and I think that's what you need to keep in mind here, is that anything we do under business combinations here, I don't care the fact that there's NCI or not involved here, business combination, even wholly within the same group, and you have to prepare those separate sub-consolidated accounts, it's the same issue.
And the other issue you get if you're dealing with listed entities with NCIs is that when this difference between the shares you gave up value, which is quoted, so we know it, and the assets predecessor accounting, that debit invariably gets lost in equity. But it does mean when you compare that entity with its competitors, it's going to have an apparent improvement in its return on equity than others because of this asset that's been directly offset against equity because of common control, which would have been an asset on the balance sheet if it had been IFRS 3. So they're going to have a competitive advantage through this transaction at the subsidiary level. I agree, it eliminates the parent, but there is knock-on consequences in that subsidiary level accounting.
And I think there are pros and cons, if you would, but I think, especially from a fairer perspective, because when I had my former job, when we had many kind of this, and if you would then have to apply really business combination accounting, how many asset and liabilities value you have to then store, because when you have this kind of information, I think is not worth it. Because we should also think about that. Because if you have many of this business combination and a common control in a big group of companies, and then if you would require really to have business combination accounting, that would require a lot of kind of storing fair values at all the point in time where you have to have this business combination.
And to undo the, you know,
and to undo
anything that takes the income statement on a revalued basis.
It's impossible. Not work. That is what you should not forget.
I like your answer of not workable, as long as you now take it into equity accounting. Because we already keep that long detailed information for intercompany transactions on equity accounting.
It is on the research project. Any other comments? No? Then thank you very much.